Hi, I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching The Future is Female, the show where we find the extraordinary in every woman. Now, as we celebrate our 63rd year of independence, it's time to take stock of how far we've come as a nation and also to think about how to continue building a better Malaysia. Tonight on the show, I have with me YB Nurul Izzah Anwar. She is the PKR Member of Parliament for Pematang Pau. Izzah, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for doing away with formalities on the show.
Thank you, Melissa.
Good to have you here. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this better Malaysia beyond platitudes, right?
Yeah.
When you think of a better Malaysia, what is it that you think of? What is it that you are working towards?
So I believe that, we have a beautiful country, but of course we're constantly trying to maximize and fulfill our greatest and deepest potentials. Mm. And one of the ways is through evidence-based pilots in my constituency, because when you talk about reform, this is my third term, mm-hmm. and I'd like to actualize the ideals of reform, making sure things can work better in terms of employment opportunities, in terms of systems, and protection for the most vulnerable in our society.
Okay, all right. So, in my head, a good country is a country that protects its people.
Yeah.
I mean, we're always going to have fissures in society. We're going to have, certain parts of society that don't get along with others.
Sure.
But the basis of a good country is a country that protects, takes care of its people. You've had three terms. You've had some time to do this. Do you feel satisfied with what you've accomplished so far?
So, of course, you're never satisfied. You're always trying to achieve and improve and evolve as a person, as a leader, as a mother. And I think, being in the opposition, especially in Lembah Pantai, I call it my first love, it really helped me understand the limitations of a legislator in a system that deeply penalizes the opposition. So, it provides you the drive. What kind of great ideas? How do you improvise or implement some bits of guerrilla warfare?
Okay.
Yeah, in terms of pushing forth progressive ideas. So from there, we started our tuition programs for those who have gotten the worst results.
In Lembah Pantai.
In Lembah Pantai, I continued it in Pematang Pau. I did my cashless food stamp program with my Kasih Foundation. Mm. Started in Lembah Pantai, proceeded to
Lembah
almost
Pantai
600
constituency
kids in Pematang Pau.
And Pematang Pau constituency.
Yeah.
Are they similar in terms of demographics?
So, of course, in Kuala Lumpur, you have the urban poor, you have the microcosm of Malaysia, right? Very multiracial, far more mixed compared to Pematang Pau. Pematang Pau is semi-urban, semi-rural, some would say, right? There will be those who are perhaps seen as having lower income,
right,
versus their counterparts in the mainland. Mm. So it's different, but it's also beautiful because it allows me to understand and appreciate, I call this my fatherland, because my father came from, of course, Penang, right? And from there, you must first understand what are the baseline needs of the constituents.
Mm.
And that's why I commissioned Think City under Khazanah to have, to produce the different needs study so that I, as a legislator, can do my work more effectively.
Right, so you need that information to understand who it is that you're serving. I do want to ask you, Izzah, how you respond after being in politics for a long time. How do you respond to...
Very long, huh?
Well, most of your working life has been in politics. And when you hear criticism about politics and politicians, how do you respond to that? Because the criticism is that politics and politicians are neither an avenue for change, right?
So this is a terrible time for politicians everywhere, not just Malaysia, but I think the general trend has been quite cynical. It brings about, of course, I'm myself very saddened, frustrated, but I always considered myself as a political activist. Because you begin your journey understanding the importance of a democracy, and of course what you can do when you achieve public office, when you're a legislator, how you would like to change and affect society would be done in a sort of a more powerful manner. So for me, it's very important to translate your ideals into programs and concretized policies that people can feel, right? When you talk about democracy, or what does it matter if you have a free media? People need to understand how it affects their lives. Mm. So when you know, when we decided to embark on this multidimensional poverty index pilot,
yes,
it's because we're trying to say, if you talk about future-proofing Malaysia, how can you do so when you don't have a way to future-proof the measurement of deprivation faced by people on the ground?
Right. Okay.
So that's what I feel most passionate about, that they understand we have to utilize our role to empower not just ourselves, because I wouldn't have the answers to everything, but brilliant minds from University of Malaya, economists, professors, collaborating with them to exact change on the ground.
Are you seeing a lot more of this collaboration? Because again, politics alone, politicians alone, cannot be an avenue for change alone. It has to be in collaboration with actors in society already working to make that difference. Are you
You're
seeing
absolutely
more of that?
Right. I think so, because even in the courses in universities, talking about MIT pre-COVID, there's a lot of integration,
uh-huh,
different disciplines coming together. Even the best projects will always be unearthed from collaboration between engineers and doctors. Mm. So definitely in politics, I mean, politicians must be forced to implement policies and programs that are evidence-based, that inculcate and utilize the best brains and experts who rightly should decide on what to be done.
That's not been our historical track record?
Partly, of course, there is. I must say, the fact that we're enjoying, alhamdulillah, somewhat good results from management of COVID is due to the frontline healthcare professionals, mm-hmm, in Kementerian Kesihatan Malaysia.
And evidence-based policy.
Evidence-based, you know.
Trust the science.
Trust the science.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break, Izzah, but after this, I do want to come back and talk about the importance of women representation in politics, why it's important to have more women voices doing the policies that you talked about.
Thank you.
Going to be right back on The Future's Female. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Future's Female. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm chatting tonight to YB Nurul Izzah Anwar. She's the Member of Parliament for Pematang Pau. When we talk about the importance of women representation in politics, the lack of representation to me indicates the power dynamics in societies, not just here, but throughout the world. And when I see my parliament not representing me equally, I think that represents an imbalance in the power dynamics. And I'm just wondering, Izzah, why is it that Malaysian politics or the political environment in Malaysia is so hostile towards women? Is that one of the reasons why it discourages women from participating in politics at that level of lawmaking?
So, of course, in my view, Melissa, I think the ecosystem or the landscape is very much designed to shape the role of a man.
Okay.
You talk about the programs, you talk about what's expected from a member of parliament, and that's why I felt rather fortunate that we, Keadilan, the People's Justice Party, came in the wake of a political and financial crisis. In a sense, there was room to maneuver. We had our first female president, and we also allowed our female wing, Wanita Keadilan, to sort of have his own independence. They pushed for 30% representation of female candidates in the party, and a lot of policies we could rather decide on an independent basis. So that formed kind of the strength and the image and identity of the party, which also helped me, because
you saw it represented.
You have to work on it, like
okay,
everything, but at least, you know, automatically we had female heading divisions,
okay,
in different states, including in Kedah. So that helped, right? But you need to work on it. When you try to create a culture, it requires everyone's support.
Right.
So in terms of the training, in terms of the engagement, it also requires male leaders
right.
to respect and understand the role of a woman. I was campaigning in Sarawak in the previous state elections. I remember I was breastfeeding my son. Mm. So I made sure everyone understood the need to support me so that I can also, you know, store the milk
okay.
for my son okay. whilst campaigning. I mean, but if you don't start that kind of awareness, not just for you, mm. but for other women,
okay.
then you won't get anywhere.
So that is the role of the political party, right?
Yes.
You do need the political party to support candidates, to support
yes.
budding young talent, and allow them the way to kind of grow and move through the ranks. But what about the system as a whole? I want to talk about, you know, kind of growing outwards, right? So you talked about an ecosystem, the political party is one.
Yeah.
And then you have the political landscape. Are there a lot of male allies in the political landscape? Are there men who recognize their privilege and recognize the gender inequity and are actively trying to support women in leveling that playing field?
So it hasn't been that easy in a sense that women or female leaders are subjected to different types of attacks in society.
And you yourself?
Yes. You know, you're talking about sexual harassment, which men are relatively protected or insulated from. And because of that, I feel when you talk about the creation of select committees, whether for gender equality or for other forms mm-hmm. of institutionally created mechanisms, they have to involve men. Mm-hmm. They have to ensure that men also take up the position to do the same thing. It is not a burden that women have to shoulder alone.
Yes.
And, you know, in the landscape, I mean, there will always be opportunities where you're going to be harassed.
Yeah.
Where
online?
I think, you know, when AOC gave that speech, it just resonated with so many people.
Right. This is a fellow lawmaker.
Fellow lawmaker, and you look at the IPU study, Interparliamentary Union mm-hmm. on women, with female legislators across the board, even in Europe, so many of them have suffered one form or another, you know, sexual attacks, sexual harassment. So
Comments made during parliament.
So for me, we also have to understand it is not just restricted to women who are in higher places of power, but also ordinary women,
mm.
you know, on the ground. And that's why the treatment or the culture that we need to change has to involve women across the different spectrums in society, mm. even homemakers, for that matter. I always remind people, when you talk about training, you have to also train your son,
mm.
right? You have to start that kind of awareness. And it also has to be, when we talk about women in places of power, don't just make the responsibility of protecting other women on women's alone. All the male legislators must also be pushed to bring up this issue and champion it accordingly.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the AOC speech because... Mm. For me, again, if it's happening at the highest echelons of power, there is a trickle-down effect. Someone
For
watching
sure.
that will say, I think it's okay to speak to women this way. And, you know, when I look at Parliament sometimes, I'm discouraged by the comments that I'm made. And I don't know how to respond to
yeah.
that. Kind of extrapolating from that, there's also the outside comments of online harassment. You yourself
yes.
have been... victim to that. How do you respond to that? How do we go about changing the perception towards female leaders, particularly, that this is not okay? This is not okay to speak to a female lawmaker like
yeah.
this, someone who is in, you know, you would never speak to a man that way. How would you go about?
So first and foremost,
changing that conversation.
It is very important to sort of set a clear-cut benchmark. You talk about UK Parliament, they even conduct trainings for legislators. Mm. And I don't think we should be exempted. I mean, there's always, you know, talking about lifelong learning. Everybody has a room to grow. Yeah.
Do you believe in that? Do you believe that, you know, people can change their perceptions or their ways through education, through training? Is that something that can change, or do we begin with a younger generation altogether?
I think we can never give up. It's important to have a two-pronged approach. One is the stick meaning having clear-cut laws. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting for the sexual harassment law to be tabled.
Hopefully by this year.
Yes. I think it should have been tabled immediately yesterday. But the point is, that is one mechanism. The other one is actually to persuade, to continuously engage.
Right.
Because again, you know, bullies come from a background of being bullied themselves in some cases. Mm.
So break the cycle, right?
You have to break the cycle.
You mentioned the anti-sexual harassment law, right?
Yes.
Are bills that are targeted to about women or to the welfare of women, do those bills get bipartisan support and across and gender, both genders as well? Do they get the support of male legislators?
I think for now, relatively, there's general support. My only issue is the women's ministry is not being seen as a frontline ministry. It's always relegated somewhat, right? There's always going to be second to the important matters of the Ministry of Home Affairs or the important matters of the Trade Ministry or, you know, sideline such as their bill. Their funding is less than 1% of the overall budget for Malaysia. So I think considering during COVID, they're the ones that have to dispense assistance through the JKM food baskets. They're the ones who have to think about the needs of the vulnerable segments.
It is a welfare ministry.
They are the frontline ministry. Mm. So when you look at it that way, the person who controls the women's ministry, you know, I remember when Datuk Seri Tan Wan Azizah was the Deputy Prime Minister as well as the women's minister. Mm. I think you want to shift it, right? You want to make sure that whatever she says, the Sri Rina, for example, is taken seriously. When they go against hard on, you know, child abuse, everyone takes stock, and the Ministry of Home Affairs is running after her to make sure we do and they do their bit. Mm. So when you start pushing it, even in, as an agenda, I think you slowly change how people perceive women's issues. Ah, women's issues, rather than. No, these are
societal issues.
Yes,
yes. The welfare issues of society.
For sure.
Okay, another quick break, but we'll continue our conversation with YB Izzah in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned to The Futures Female. Welcome back to this Merdeka special episode of The Future is Female. I'm speaking to YB Nurul Izzah Anwar, MP for Pematang Pau. And Izzah, I want to talk to you a little bit about the work that you do in Pematang Pau. You alluded to earlier evidence-based pilot projects. Talk to me about that work, particularly in terms of how it's impacting the community, not just women and children, but making a change in the community.
So we have launched, when I first came to Pematang Pau, the Pematang Pau Women's Project. We wanted to ensure that women in Pematang Pau who are seamstresses are given training so they can improve the quality. This is Joe Siddick's idea to me,
okay,
to the Mahaguru at the time. And then I made sure that they can, you know, sew to the level that boutique hotels can take up and order directly. Because you want to create an ecosystem where they can survive and, of course, make ends meet in future, right? And then, of course, we had postnatal masseurs who were trained by Tanah Merah, nothing less than Tanah Merah. So I believe that it's important to have this matching segments and to allow them to earn more in future by improving their skills. So upskilling is very crucial. And extending from that, we were very lucky to collaborate with Professor Rushdie and Hussein Habil from University Malaya UMKAS under Prof. Adiba, a methadone van, which has been delayed a bit, but for heroin addicts in my constituency. As you know, drug addiction is a big problem in Malaysia, so we are going to have the programs being run in mosques, because you then get the qaria, the committee, to be part of this, you break the taboo, and you showcase the importance of providing second chances for those who want to leave the addiction.
That seems to me a very difficult conversation to broach in the first place, in the very beginning, to sit down and say, I want to do a methadone clinic in a mosque.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
So again, evidence-based, You must see whether it has worked in the past, whether there were studies and the efficacy is sound. And we got it from UMKAS and JAKIM because JAKIM approved the project. And I also got the Mufti of Penang to give a yes. So it was delayed because of COVID, but inshallah, God willing, we're going to continue as soon as we get the necessary funding approved. And of course, the second segment is the multidimensional poverty index. Mm. But I go back to evidence-based. You know, it's not coming from my brilliant mind. It comes from the fact that it's worked before. Right. 89% success rate in University Malaya, UM Mosque. And of course, you do need the acceptance and support from different stakeholders. You mentioned earlier, it's not just a politician. It's the Mufti, it's the Qariah. And then from there, of course, it's also to encourage others, you know, to live a healthier life. And if you have problems, for example, with your mental situation or stress, then we have the head of psychiatry to manage the project.
Does all of this require time? I mean, these are projects aimed to improve the quality of living, the livelihoods of your constituents. You are a three-term MP. Is that what is required? The time to truly understand the problems on the ground, the time to convince people to come on board to some of these somewhat controversial ideas? Is that what is needed for legislators? So when they're at the, you know, when voters are at the ballot box, they're thinking, should we give them more time? Is that what it is?
Well, people have said that I should be a politician than what I'm doing right now.
Than a political activist, as you called yourself?
I guess. But I do believe, like, for example, this methadone program or the cashless food stamp assistance, which has served children and women in my constituency, and the multidimensional poverty index, it also drives home the need to produce solutions on the ground.
What did you mean by that? By I should be more of a politician? People have said I should be more of a politician.
I guess everyone's trying to avert the danger of being a populist. Because look at politics around the world. It's just quick sound bites. Mm-hmm. It's really promises of the sun, the moon and the stars. But I don't know. I feel that, like Safia, my eldest, always tells me, you know, Mama, it's a five-year kind of job contract. So in those 5 years, I need to make sure in the first year what we can achieve, but I also want to empower our best. The professors, like Professor Fatima Kari, she's the foremost economist studying poverty for years. She did work in Hulu Terengganu in Krian. I just feel like, you know, I'm so privileged having her to agree to work on this, right? So for me, we don't have much time. You know, we need to future-proof the country. And that's why we need to have the ability to empower those who are smartest with the best solutions. Mm. And if you fail to do that, you're not a very good legislator, are you? Mm. Or politician. So I hope we're going to have a record, a report for all these pilots. And we will more, you know, than willing be to share this with everybody.
Right.
Because it should be replicated everywhere.
Are you working, is there bipartisan work for this seems like work that will benefit communities.
Yeah.
Are you working with politicians on the other side of the aisle?
So I met Tok Pa, Minister in the Prime Minister's Department, to explain about my multidimensional poverty index, for sure. And I remember there's a ROSE project, and if you know this,
yes,
under PPUM,
Professor cervical cancer.
Yeah, cervical cancer screening.
Self-testing, yes.
So we have 400 women in Pematang Power who run the test, but I made sure. And they're also working with members of parliament across the board, right?
Okay.
Because you want to have support not just from Keadilan, but also from other legislators, from even the government of the day. And I think it's important because these projects have to be protected from any extreme political jingoism. So I believe, you know, no matter what happens, you know, you must preserve your project.
Right.
Because people's lives are at stake.
So to ensure the longevity of it, so you can see, you can track the record. Have you always been an evidence-based politician?
I try to be.
Has that always been your philosophy?
I believe so. You know, Banerjee and Duflo, the winners of the last year's Nobel Prize in Economics, I followed them since Poor Economics, the first publication. Okay. So I feel that this is the great thing because, you know, providing charitable assistance or doing work on the ground, you can't just do that to make yourself feel good. Right. You have to make sure it works, that people's lives on the ground actually improve from the start, you know, at the end, from the start. Mm. So I think if you talk about even a lot infrastructure projects, there has to be a post-mortem element.
How effective was this been in bringing about change?
Perhaps sometimes you give mosquito nets and that's not what they need. You know, so, you know, bearing in mind, it does work. I'm just saying that.
We should be accountable and have a look.
You're
at
more
the
modern. Okay. You're talking about 21st century. You're talking about 2020. Heck, you got to measure poverty in a more modern and effective way.
Well, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing some of the work that you've been doing. I'm Melissa Idris, and that's all the time we have for this episode of The Future is Female. I will be back next week for another episode. Thank you so much for watching, folks. Selamat Hari Merdeka, everyone.
Yeah, Selamat Hari Merdeka.
Selamat Hari Merdeka. And here's to a better Malaysia.
Inshallah.
Good night, folks.